Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio. Joining me now for Media Matters is Marty Gibson. It's actually afternoon now, Marty. Wow, where does the day go? How are you?
Oh, good. I'm good. Rain's falling.
Oh, yeah, it's dire here.
Yeah, but the days are steadily getting longer.
Exactly.
We inch inexorably closer to summer.
Which is always good news. Plenty to talk about this morning. One of the things that I wanted to touch on, which has been one of the biggest developing stories we've, and I'm not going to dive into it too deep, but I just want to have a touchstone, check in with it, is of course the developing Manurewa Marae scandal. Andrea Vance has been covering this. Thomas Cramner has been covering this over on X. In Sunday Star Times, Vance did Manurewa Marae subjective complaints during the local council election. So a new twist to the same story. Further accusations have emerged about electoral practices with allegations Marae staff were picking up voting papers. Complaints about Manurewa Marae, including the staff collecting voting papers as they delivered campaign advertising, were made during the 2022 local body elections, but were not referred to police. And a video has been circulating on social media. So on the video were Tash Kemp, Chair Rangi McLean, and Jackie Harima. And it was, the meeting was chaired by JT himself. And yeah, it was certainly, there's no shame. Absolutely, well, zero shame.
It's that Marxist ends justify the means thing. You know, he starts out by saying, obviously, you know, the system disadvantages Māori. You know, it's designed to disadvantage Māori. But you can hear the rationalising, the sawdust in that gearbox, you know, to stop it clanking. Is, you know, well, we're victims, so whatever we do, upturned fist. It's a symbol you often see in their social media posts.
We're going to get on to standards in a minute. But when you've been allowed to get away with poor behaviour for a really long time, it's amazing how brazen you could become. Vance covers it here in the article. In the video, Kemp, McLean and Jackie Harima, a then employee of the Waipareta Trust, were interviewed by broadcaster John Tamahere, also chief executive of the Trust and president of Te Pāti Māori. We do need to encourage our whānau to go out and collect those envelopes and support their whānau to vote, Kemp said. Can I just say, JT, there's already been complaints about Manurewa Marae soliciting votes. We're not hiding behind who we are at Manurewa Marae, and it's our role and I think our responsibility to encourage our whānau and empower them to vote. Both Kemp and Tamahere were concerned that declining number of postboxes would affect turnout. Kemp also said waiting times to cast a special vote in the area were up to 2.5 hours. Just go to motivate your whānau, get on the phone, go around to their houses, pick up their voting forms, tick the boxes for them. It's probably illegal, but I'm asking you to do it anyway, Tamahere said, laughing. No, look, because the whole system is rotted against us, so you've got to level it up somehow. Tamahere said the voting process is weighted towards older, non-Māori, white fellas. So there you go. There's your Marxist upturned fist.
Yeah, well, and you know, there's that other dimension where a while ago I can't remember the exact context, but he was saying, you know, in 10 years' time, you're not going to be ruling over these people. We're going to be ruling over them. And it's like, yeah, you sort of picturing yourself as a feudal warlord in your vision for Aotearoa, you know, where you're the rangatiratanga, you're ruling over these peasants, and you've got some slaves who are lower humans who have to pay your jizya. You take the fruit of their labour without any recognition or recompense. Selling that to New Zealanders, John. Honey?
Well, he has managed to turn Māori into a commodity so successfully and use the government to fund it. The article does continue on, and Vance Blesser got some views in terms of, is it illegal, is it illegal, how shady is it, and what have you. But there was one quote that really stood out. They'd spoken to three experienced campaign managers. didn't name them, but three experienced campaign managers. First two sort of suggested that what was going on was, yeah, not a good look, shouldn't do it. The third one was a little bit more ambivalent on it, saying collecting sealed envelopes and dropping them off doesn't strike me as a breach. I've been door knocking to remind people to vote. And they've said, oh yeah, and here it is. And I've dropped it off for them. It's hard to police that. He also pointed to cultural and class differences. There isn't that middle class ethos that voting is an intensely private act that doesn't apply in working class settings like unions, Pacifica, churches, marae, where it's taken as given who everyone is voting for, and it's seen as a shared responsibility to make sure the collective voice is heard.
Yeah, like a school of kahawai.
That's a very, very bold assumption.
You could say patronising.
You think? I mean, that was very Rāwiri Waititi. What did he say? We speak for all Māori? Really?
Yeah. For those of you who caught our little special edition on Media Matters edition on China, I pointed out the change in tone that John Tamihere's had between 2005, as quoted by Winston Peters, when he was talking about what a terrible idea race-based politics was and ethno-nationalism generally, the change in tune that he's had since then, which during that time included a trip to China with Chipkins. I wonder whether we're seeing a bit of that Stalinist denationing.
Well, to round out this article, Tamihere responded with an email to the Sunday Star Times of Andrea Vance. You are doing a wonderful job in protecting our democracy from the scourge of untrustworthy natives, is what he said to Vance. Well, all I can say is if the shoe fits, JT, you're doing a good job.
Yeah, well, I mean, the budget documents are out now, and Health Minister Shane Retty hinted in a speech earlier this year that he was open to giving iwi Māori partnership boards representative groups of local Māori that once liaised with DHB the ability to commission some health services. So it's important that they clean this up. I understand Te Pāti Māori is organising protests against the government's abolition of the Māori Health Authority. I'm told Te Pāti Māori supporters are going to drive without wearing seatbelts, live on KFC and energy drinks, fail to keep appointments with specialists and dentists, smoke, vape, drink excessively, and not open their windows so they get mold and respiratory diseases.
Is that what they said?
Well, apparently it's all to protest the failure of the government to improve their health outcomes.
So same shit, different day.
But I mean, it's just a rumour.
Oh, good grief.
As John Tamihere says, I'd like to see some evidence of it, if it's true. Well, there's plenty of evidence of it happening. I mean, at this stage, it's pretty clear they do give people KFC to get their votes, but I'm not sure about the health protest part. I mean, they're always protesting, but you know what I mean.
Who knows?
An inquiry or something, and obviously there may be cultural aspects to it that I can't possibly understand. Being Pākehā with my family only here for 180 years, probably be irresponsible to assume that there is a correlation with Te Pāti Māori outrage about the loss of race-specific health services and their failure to address the real issues behind poor Māori health outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's better that we just leave it there until we have more information.
Good idea. So let's move from one malignant narcissist onto another, shall we? I hear that there is another movie being made about Dear Leader.
Yeah, a very raw Hollywood documentary about Dame Jacinda Ardern's being made. It has been announced.
Let's wait with that for bated breath.
Yeah, the documentary is from the filmmakers who made the Jessica Chastain starring drama The Eyes of Tammy Faye and the Oscar-nominated Hell or High Water will follow Ardern from the moment she receives the Labour Party nomination to the birth of her child. She had a baby. To her resignation in 2023, according to US entertainment trade magazine Variety.
So what are they calling it, 1984 Revisited or A Return to Animal Farm? What's the working title?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, the first film that these guys did, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, were about Tammy Faye Backer and her husband Jim Backer. I don't know if you remember them.
They were the evangelists.
Charismatic couple who used television to whip their gullible supporters into a religious fervor, fooling them into thinking that they were doing God's work when in reality they were just looking out for themselves and fleeced their flock of millions. So, you know.
It's a familiar story. It is. This will be a doddle.
You know, part of their scam was they promised to house their followers. And, you know, oversold lifetime partnerships that were supposed to provide the partners lodging in Heritage USA. This is from the LA Times. Prosecutors charged that not enough lodging was built and that the once charismatic TV preacher and his close aides diverted $3.7 million of the $158 million they raised, using it to support decadent lifestyles.
So what do they call it? Backer build? Or build backer better?
Well, the second movie they made, Hell or High Water, is about men who rob banks. Not the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, and they didn't get away with $100 billion. But, they might do a follow-up film, I guess, about Grant Robertson.
See, they could have called that Squealers Millions or Squealers Billions. Oh, far out. Are we giving any money to this one? Is there any public money going to
this one? Ardern herself is backing this film, telling the New Zealand Herald that it had her support as the producers have not sought or used film commission funding. And that was important to me. I guess that this insistence is because everything the New Zealand Film Commission touches seems to turn to shit. Or maybe it's shit to start with. Figure that I couldn't find the other week, which was from Shane Curry, was that the New Zealand is a bit of a, you know, sidetrack. The New Zealand Film Commission spent from 2020 $88 million on 54 films, which have made just under 14 million.
Yeah, I know.
It sounds modest, but remember, you know, the taxpayer is already on the hook for a few million to immortalise Dear Leader.
I think it was 850,000.
Well, it was a $3.2 million documentary that had already had, it had 800,000 of public money approved by the Film Commission, but it was likely to be eligible for a further $1.2 million in taxpayer money through the government's screen production rebate scheme. So, $2 million is. Kiwi blog, Dave Farrar said, $2 million of taxpayer money for a hagiography.
Yeah, we covered that story with the Fourth Estate, with Peter and David Harvey on Friday. So check that out if you haven't heard it.
The reason that she doesn't want Film Commission money is the producer of the new film, Madison Wells, CEO and the film's producer, Gigi Pritzker, said Ardern was an inspiration. We are so proud that our first doc chronicles the life of the extraordinary Jacinda Ardern, her uniquely empathetic and inclusive lifestyle leadership style has been and continues to be an inspiration to people everywhere, including me. This is exactly the kind of empowering, moving, and boundary-pushing story we tell here at Madison Wells. There's another reason Jacinda Ardern can have this film made without adding another straw to the back of New Zealand taxpayers. American filmmaker Gigi Pritzker is a billionaire heir to the Hyatt fortune. And so they're a Chicago-based family who are heavy donors to the Democrat Party.
I mean, it seems to be a lot of money to spend just to be able to have dinner with Jacinda, really, doesn't it?
Well, she's moved into the globalist push to put a smiley face on the boots stamping on a human face forever. You look at where these families' political connections go, they go to APAC. They go to heavily to connections to Israel. They go to US Democrats, all connected with APAC, Council for Foreign Relations. It's the political representation of the blob, you know, the big military-industrial complex that likes war. So, yeah, that's where Jacinda's gone. She's been hanging out with Prince Harry. She's getting film made by Hollywood liberals.
I mean, remember there was all that talk of, oh, no, she's feathering her nest. She's going to go into the UN. She's going to do this. This is what she's trying to get herself and position herself for. No, she's had her eye on the big game. I mean, she's gotten a ticket into the, you know, the big girls and boys cool club, really, hasn't she?
You've got to admire her ability to just pat herself on the back. You know, the hide.
Yeah.
It's like the hide Christopher Hipkins has to have to still, you know, to be criticizing the government for the ferry breaking down and for the crime. And
Well, and you have to think about it too from, you know, from Clark's perspective. I mean, the business opportunities for our Clarkie.
Well, yeah, he's the Jim Backer of hand-wringing socialism, isn't he? Our evangelist career.
Moving to standards, a level of standards and setting some standards. The Jacinda standard is certainly one I'm quite happy to leave behind as far as I'm concerned. I was saying to you before, I was sort of, as I was chewing through the papers, I was starting to get a little fractious, and then I thought, no, I'm going to start somewhere that usually calms me, and that is Bruce Cottrell. With all these other things, because of course the infrastructure issues, you've had the pylon falling over, you've had the, I wonder if they had a pylon with the pylon. Anyway, that's another thought.
Someone just unbolted it, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. So that was mismanagement. And then you had the ferry running adrift in Pride Week. Couldn't sail straight if it tried.
Actually, if you haven't heard it, I've sent a bit of a bit of a note to Paul Brennan. His interview with the old salty sea dog was a masterclass in actually finding out really what went on. Gosh, it was good. Mm. Felt myself flush with pride at the quality of Reality Check Radio coverage with that story.
Now, that was Monday's Breakfast, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such good quality journalism.
Yeah. So Cottrell, he Saturday's Herald, priorities, people, priorities was the headline. Time for us, MPs included, to focus on things that matter. It starts with, they say there are lies, damn lies, and statistics. I don't know much about the other two, but stats are giving us bad news on a weekly basis. Everywhere we look, we seem to be underperforming. I try to listen to what people are saying. I talk to a lot of people. I read a lot. And every now and then I tune in to talk back. I'm often surprised by how wound up we get about things that don't matter. And you talked about this a little bit last week.
Mm. Yeah, it infuriates me how much we argue about bits of squid ink that are sprayed in our faces to stop us seeing what's really going on.
Yeah, and he referred to the whole expenses thing in terms of the allowances that MPs get. And as he just said, it's a smokescreen. Yeah, as you said, it's a squid ink.
They'll take care of the pennies and the pounds will take care of themselves, seems to be the media's approach to things sometimes.
He carries on by saying, I've often said we Kiwis care more about the All Blacks coach than we do to the state of the nation. I genuinely think the All Blacks will be okay. We don't need to worry about that. The country, on the other hand, has some problems. The expectations we have constantly set and reset by the standards of behaviour demonstrated by our elected representatives, sadly, in recent conduct of our MPs, suggests standards are declining.
Yeah. My feeling is, this is something that you may have heard me say before, but we often talk about the environmental effect of burning fossil fuels. But I think what's worse is the impact that access to cheap energy and abundant food has had on human character. It's allowed us to have people as leaders who really would never be our leaders in a survival situation. Imagine survival situation putting Chris Hipkins in charge. Even Christopher Luxon. Lead us out of this. You wouldn't. And it's because times are easy and, you know, tough times make strong men, and strong men make easy times, and easy times make weak men, and weak men make tough times. We're at the weak men make tough times part of this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the sooner we get to the strong men making easy times bit, the less tough the times are going to get.
One of the things, as I continue to read, and he goes into standards, is without saying it, was the whole vibe of it was what I call the Jordan Peterson 12 Rules for Life vibe. I mean, I couldn't help but feeling that he'd read the book, because one of the things in that book that Jordan Peterson talked about was setting a good, high-quality personal standard. Mm. And I think he dedicates an entire chapter to cleaning your room.
Yeah.
And the importance of cleaning your room and cleaning yourself and making sure that you're well presented and what that does for your own self-esteem and standard setting and leadership and all of those things. Now, I have to say, my youngest son, whilst he's not read the book, he did actually see a video podcast on Peterson talking about that entire concept. And to that end, I now have a teenager that has a pretty tidy room.
Awesome.
Thanks, JP. Mm. I think it's really important. I've just been talking to Rodney, and one of the things I said to Rodney was around, you know, manners and deportment and how you treat people. And Cottrell sort of does talk about this. He says, towards the end of the last parliamentary term, the wheels started falling off the Labor government. A number of the MPs were caught out acting inappropriately. Since the new parliament term began, the Greens have been a one-party headline machine with repeated failures on the behaviour scale. You see, the more we see inappropriate behaviour, the more desensitised we become to it. Pretty soon, we start accepting it.
Mm. One of my theories of politics is that the myth of the young politician bringing fresh new thinking. I think when you get young politicians, you often get people who haven't done the shadow work and aren't actually operating from a place of conviction that's informed by experience with life. It's merely aped from older politicians. So in that way, having young politicians almost solidifies old things. And also what you get is you get people who haven't done the shadow work. They haven't had that moment where they look at their own self-image and realize that a lot of it is just protecting their ego. Mm. And actually, there are parts of them that aren't terribly worthy that need pulling out. And until someone's done that, you're vulnerable to those bits of narcissistic rage. And especially given that the sort of person who's drawn to be a young politician often does maybe have some narcissistic tendencies.
Well, this is where progressivism and conservatism butt up against each other, isn't it?
Mm.
Because traditionally you would have that sort of chain of trust that I talked about with Mia Hughes last week, where the person lower on the rung trusts the next person above the rung to have done all the work and pass down the knowledge and have the experience that they need as they move up. And politics was the same. So you went in as a junior politician. You didn't know everything. You needed to learn from those. I mean, and often you started in other roles and had some life experience. You learnt from those more senior politicians within your party, and you sort of progressed through into gather more and more knowledge and more responsibility. Whereas now you have these, as you say, these young youthful politicians that come in who are really high on ideology and yeah. ideas and self-worth and very little reality wedded in the real world.
Well, I know you love a good Animal Farm George Orwell comparison,
I do.
But you know, when you hear old, and I mentioned this on the China special, when you hear our old friend Ferris, the Te Pāti Māori MP, talk about how this is the kohanga generation. You can't help but think of Squealer's puppies that he takes away and trains to be attack dogs. And they have that very Maoist separation from the past. It's like, yeah, this might not be familiar to your uncles, but this is, you know, a new generation and they're ready for the revolution.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the other columns that sort of touched on this, you know, that kind of followed on from the cultural, and I was going to skip over it because the headline for me was kind of like, oh, yeah, this is not really going to be something that I was, that we may not cover. And I'm kind of glad that I did read it because I read this pretty much straight after I'd read the cultural, and the two of them go hand in hand with what you've just said in regards to that responsibility. And it's the Heather Duplessis-Allen opinion piece, Wellington City Council going down the toilet over airport. Wellington City Council has, you know, had a few things on its plate in recent times.
And they're going broke.
Oh, in spectacular fashion. So if Wellington City Council hasn't already stuffed up badly enough to warrant having the grown-ups called in, it's getting very close, says Heather. The big test is shaping up to be whether the council can pass its own long-term plan next week. This should be basic stuff, but the very business of council, if they can't pass the plan, they literally can't do their job. Some councillors say they've been threatened in legal advice paid for by unelected staff that if they don't back the sale of the airport shares, they themselves will be at risk of prosecution. The rot goes to the top. So this is around standards. Even the CEO, Barbara McCarrow, put the squeeze on, issuing a new rule that bans elected councillors from being able to access all the information they need to do their jobs. When he heard that, local government minister Simeon Brown said he was appalled and that the CEO is acting like a politician when she should be acting like a CEO, and the politician should have access to the information that they needed. Makeiro withdrew the rule. WCC is clearly dysfunctional, and that's without even including the mayor's alcoholism, absenteeism, unelected officials' bizarre attempt to give free money to the NASDAQ-listed Reading to renovate the cinema complex, and the never-ending examples of council decisions squeezing out the life of the inner-city retailers.
Mm.
And she then goes on saying, very few watching the circus will need to be convinced that grown-ups should be called in, at the very least a Crown Observer, and you know all about that in Tauranga. But the minister shows no enthusiasm to pull that trigger. And from his perspective only, he's right to be reticent. He should let Wellington City Council do an undeniable job of wetting itself in public first. The catastrophe should be beyond doubt, and he should be appeared forced to intervene. Partly that's because his party, National, has made a big play of letting local communities call their own shots. As dysfunctional as this council is, this is what the local community voted for.
Yeah. And I mean, I'd go even further than that and say they should have more green policies. They should have a wealth tax.
You've maintained this all along.
They should have, what was it, a quadrupling of refugees. All the other harebrained things that they want. I mean, the funny bit, she was saying the optics of a national minister neutering the power of the country's first green mayor and most left-wing council ever could be used against him. But he said, but more than anything, a green-led council fighting in public is hardly a spectacle a centre-right central government should rush to hide. WCC became the darling of left-wing voters when it was the only council that moved left in an election where most councils shifted to the right. But the disaster they've turned into has even members of the Green Party distancing themselves from the Green Mayor. As they say, never interrupt your opponent while he is in the middle of making a mistake. It's a pity Wellington ratepayers have to suffer that mistake. I don't think it's a pity. You lay down with dogs, you're going to get fleas.
Get fleas, exactly. Exactly.
And then, you know, as we normally do, below the very feisty and fragrant Heather Duplessis-Allen, the tired old deputy dog, Shane Tupou.
Yeah.
And Shane, in this column, is talking crap about climate change. Just the received lefty wisdom.
Oh, I just felt like saying, I looked at it and I thought, there's no way on earth Shane's
right. We can solve the climate crisis. Okay. All right, Shane. Let's just borrow or print $75 billion this decade and then send it to nuclear-armed developing nations that are building coal-fired power stations via one of the most corrupt financial markets the world's ever seen, where 60 to 90% of transactions are fraudulent, have zero effect on a trace gas that's vital to all life. Yeah, let's do that. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, I just was like, Shane, this is so far out of your lane. I don't get it, dude. I mean, there's so much you could be talking about. I mean, you could have been talking about what's going on at the Manurewa Marae. Oh, no, because that's your mate JT, so you don't want to do that. Talk about scrutiny week. That's good. Oh, no, that's right. Willie missed 55 minutes of the 60-minute scrutiny session on broadcasting. Oops. Scheduling. So, no, we won't talk about that. Yeah, no, I guess this is where you go to when all your mates stuff up and you don't want to say anything bad about your mates.
Every year temperature records are broken and storms get wild. Well, there's the inconvenient factor of that meteorological data that Ian Wishart unearthed that NIWA had pointedly ignored. So, yeah, you know, he's saying 21 years ago when Bill English rode Myrtle the tractor at Parliament, climate change was still a distant threat. It was something that was decades away, and you could pretend it wasn't real. Not anymore. Yeah.
So the only threat there, Shane, is climate change ideology. It's a religion, darling. It's a cult.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Yeah.
Anywho.
What else? All the stuff about crime.
What else? There was, because Andrea was otherwise engaged with Manurewa Marae stuff, Damien Grant popped up actually with her usual column spot. That was quite quirky, talking about Toby Young's visit, who of course is the founder of the Free Speech Union in the UK. And that was actually quite fun. He sounds like the sort of guy, I know Simon O'Connor spoke to him here on Friday Just Gone, I think it was. Yes, Friday Just Gone. So that's definitely worth a listen. I have to admit, I wouldn't mind sitting down having a beer with Toby. Sounds like he'd be a decent wheeze, have some good stories. So that was there. The only other one that, well, there were two others that got a bit of highlighter from me. One was there was a lot of stories on tech in both the papers over the weekend. Did you peg that?
I pegged it, but I couldn't be bothered reading them. You know, and it's the usual. Liam Dan, I mean, you know, this is a classic Liam. This, you could sum Liam Dan's journalism up in this one sentence from his column, Money, How Will New Zealand Drive Economic Growth? Mining Won't Cut It. This is a sentence. But I'm not really pessimistic about this economic cycle. It's turning, slowly but surely. Monetary policy is working. Loves the banks. Reckons, yep, they're riding in to save us with their high interest rates to get us thinking that all the toilet paper money they've printed is worth something. We'll think that, as Adrian Orr said, it's a great business to be in. We print money and people think it's worth something.
Now, yeah, have you got anything else before I jump into feedback?
Yeah, I was interested in reading in Monday's paper, there's a crime crackdown. It's really interesting reading about Cuddles Costa talking about how they're doing all this stuff and think, that guy needs to quit. The only reason he hasn't is because he's another hospital pass from the Labour lovies.
Adrian.
Like Adrian Orr, like the board at TVNZ, that there's a big thing of Willie Jackson moaning that they weren't doing what he wanted and they didn't even call him to say what was going on. Old Cuddles Costa, I spoke to a cop who'd been, who was no longer a cop and had quit because of the lack of support that Cuddles Costa gave them. And they had these weird directives. Like I said, if a man and a woman were having any sort of argument, you had to send a squad car. He said that they spent so much time just turning up at these people's places where they're just sitting down watching TV. They might have had a big screaming match, but that's kind of what they do. Mm. And with that very black and white directive, the gangs just blossomed. That and the lack of two-fisted fighting them. And there was an interesting column by Jared Gilbert, which talked about how gangs used to be policed. And if they crossed the line, they kind of expected a kicking in the cells. After the infamous Morewa riot of the late 70s involving a pitched battle between the stormtroopers and police, police made the arrested gang members walk the gauntlet. Lining both sides of the corridor, they beat the men as they made their way through. No complaints were laid. The gangs knew they'd overstepped the mark. It was a different time, for the police at least. Gang members and villains still strike out at police, but the police attitude to taking matters in their own hands has transformed over the years. And this is very much the Cuddles Costa thing, has put that on steroids. And then it's got a story about custody officer punching a gang member. Here's how the incident went down. From the time the gang member arrived at the cells, he was slow to comply and belligerent. He shouted, F the police, F the pigs, or rather standard fare so far. He went on to challenge the police officer to a fight and then threatened to shoot the officer and his family. To many principled villains, bringing up the officer's family may be seen as a step too far, and one imagines a custody officer at this stage was getting hot under a collar. Then a punch was thrown. The cop says he struck the man in self-defense as the prisoner had continued with his hostile threats and moved towards him. Yet footage of the incident, at least as far as the IPCA is concerned, didn't demonstrate that well. So this guy quit before he's gotten fired. That's what we're up against. And this guy I was talking to was saying that's kind of the way you've got to police them.
Mm.
You've got to dole out the odd punch in the face. And he said the amount of weapons they've got is unbelievable.
One of the metrics, too, in terms of a visible optic metric, is, of course, the promise to have more police actively on the beat, a more visual appearance of policing, particularly in the Auckland CBD. And I think what are they talking about, an extra 51
Costa said the plan was to move to a round-the-clock model in the CBD, working on a rostered basis with five teams, each led by a sergeant. What have you been doing for the last... How long has he been?
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought that would be the norm, dude.
Increased visibility deters crime and encourages a sense of safety through positive engagement with the public and business owners, he said Cuddles. Crime trends have changed in recent years since you've been police commissioner, with more antisocial behaviour and public space crime, and we're responding by changing our deployment patterns to increase visibility and community reassurance, said Cuddles. Effeminately.
That just reminded me of a quote that Cottrell said, if standards are failing around us, we will all fall into the same trap. We will reset our own expectations of others at a level where we are less likely to be disappointed. Thereafter, our own behavioural standards will decline. After all, if no one else bothers, why should I? It's a recipe for a country in decline.
Yep. Well, that's where we are, and that's what's it. I will say, though, there was an interesting article. I'm looking forward to watching the documentary that this was about. It was about a doco maker who followed Kiwi prisoners released from jail. You know, despite the fact that they do victimize people, I do have sympathy for people who get caught, especially some of these guys who get caught up in the justice system at a young age and are often from families with a level of dysfunction that most people aren't even capable of imagining. Yeah. You know, you've got to have compassion for them because they wake up eventually. And, you know, we talk about shadow work before. The sort of shadow work those guys have to do when they look back at what they've done, you wouldn't wish that on anyone. Just all the people have hurt. But yeah, it was quite a touching article, you know, and I can imagine this documentary, which is called 100 Days Free, is going to be worth watching. And just the stories, you know, you kind of, I can think of people who've got similar stories. You know, guy who's been 501, born in Gisborne, Josh moved to Australia in 1994, age 13, after a close relative was sexually abused by another family member.
Familiar story.
Yep, deportation after 18 years on and off inside for cooking and dealing meth to fund his own addiction. He'd never returned back to New Zealand. I wasn't a criminal before I left here. I learned how to be a criminal in Australia. So he's back here. And you know, just got people wanting to reconnect with their families who've kind of had enough of them. But yeah, and this guy does have a compassionate view of them. It says he wants getting tough on crime to mean getting tough on the causes, poverty, the housing crisis, inequality, and the lack of mental health support. I'd agree with that. And to that, I'd add getting tough on people who favour victim mentality over personal responsibility, Te Pāti Māori.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, let's jump into some feedback before we get going for the day. Marie and Marty, Biden's true approval rating is a tad over 7%, according to the analysts like Martin Armstrong. Hence the Democrat need for war, depression, plague, whatever to abort the election and stop Orange Man bad to boot. That was from the text machine. Thank you, Marty. You are a breath of fresh air. Oh, you're my wind but under my wings each week, darling. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's nice. Thank you.
Actually, before I got started, where I was a bit, and then we had a little bit of a trip down memory lane and you had me laughing so hard that I had to sort of pull myself back together before we got started.
You don't laugh, you cry, Marie.
Oh, gosh. No, honestly, that's the best story I've heard in a long time. But anyway, I digress. Regarding the Northern Highway, massive percentage of that horrendous overspend was the Cowrie dieback idiocy, millions and millions to stop a virus from moving. That virus was also always there, millions squandered. It's a massive wastage in the Waitakere Ranges, I kid you not. I think we were talking about overspending. A shiver in search of a spine. I love it, Marty. Take care from Beth. P.S. The interview this morning was with Mia was good too. Thank you, Beth. Yes, it was a great interview with Mia.
I'm sure everyone knows that a shiver in search of a spine to crawl up was not an original quote by me. Paul Keating said that.
On our China thing that we did on Monday morning, hi guys, China was the first country to sign to the United Nations. There you go, that was from the text machine. Marie and Marty, thank you for your discussion on China and influences. I've been increasingly concerned as an international traveller on the obvious Chinese influence around the Pacific over the past couple of decades. They seem to be presenting themselves as a beneficial neighbour as opposed to a warmongering USA. I say that as a US citizen. It's deeply concerning, Emily. Thanks, Emily. An interesting and informative discussion with Maureen Marty. Thank you so much. You're most welcome. Hi, Paul. Interesting discussion again this morning, including Maureen Marty's input in media matters. There are some lessons here to be learned from what has taken place in South Africa, thanks to the RCR team, Peter. Actually, Peter, yes, the South African stuff, I know I've received a lot of information about that, and I think you're right. I think there is a lot there to learn, and we need to dive into that. Mike from Foxton. We missed you, Mike.
How are things, Mike?
We missed you, Mike. Hi, Marie and Marty. Not been able to catch up for a while, been a tad busy. Came across this on my NZDSOES email. I thought, as a doctory type people, you'd find this interesting. God, I hope I can work out how to attach it. Well, you did attach it. We've received it, Mike. So thank you so, so much for that. Some wonderful feedback. So thank you, everybody who has supplied feedback. Remember, 2057 is the text number and inbox@realitycheck.radio is the email. I do have one last little happy thing.
Oh, yeah? All right.
From Winsley Wrigley.
Oh, Wrigglesworth.
Yeah. Headline, New Zealand Herald. This has actually been the good thing because I've upgraded to premium again. So I
can see this. Oh, is he not writing us a letter?
No.
Oh.
No, but this is in the New Zealand Herald by Winsley Wrigley. Gisborne students succeed at Shakespeare Festival. Taira Whiti has successfully represented by Campion College with Macbeth and Lytton High School, your old alma mater, with much ado about nothing at the National Shakespeare Festival. The students were participating at the Shakespeare Globe Centre, New Zealand University of Otago. Sheila wins Shakespeare Festival. That's a freaking mouthful. Over King's Birthday weekend, Campion received an award for Outstanding Movement and Dance Macbeth, and Lytton's Reef Dittmar won the award for the most promising actor. And as a man who I know likes to tread the boards with the odd bit of Shakespeare from time to time, I thought you'd like to hear about your old school doing so well.
Nice. Good old Winsley, eh? I hope he's well.
In the spirit of you and I going down memory lane as we have been doing this morning. Hey, so thank you again, Marty. As always, we'll do it all again next week.
Look forward to that. Have a great week, everyone.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.